Hello, this is Brian Auten of Apologetics 315. Today, I'm interviewing Sean McDowell and Jonathan Morrow together to talk about their new book, and it's entitled, Is God Just a Human Invention? And 17 other questions raised by the new atheists. Now, I don't particularly like the idea of promoting books that just came out just because they just came out. And if I do, I prefer to either read them myself or really trust the authors to bring good content. So it just so happens that this book has just come out, and I have read it, and I trust the authors to bring good content. So I'll just go ahead and say right from the beginning that I'm happy to put my endorsement on the book. So now let's get to the interview. Now, I've interviewed both Sean McDowell and Jonathan Morrow before, and today I'm happy to welcome both of them back. So thanks, guys, for doing the interview.
You bet.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
Okay, now your book is called Is God a Human Invention? And 17 Other Questions Raised by the New Atheists. Now, may I ask which one of you came up with that title?
You know what? Coming up with the title for any book, but in particular this book, was really tough. Our first title was something to the effect of, Is God a Genocidal Bully? Richard Dawkins is famous for his, you know, extended line in The God Delusion about God is just a, you know, a bully with all these adjectives. But Paul Copan has a book coming out with a similar title about God being a moral monster, so we couldn't use that one. And then we thought some of the other chapters in the book, and eventually really just settled with the idea of God being a human invention really gets to the central question. And either we have created God, or God has created us. And of course, that's the theme weaving through the new atheist. So I honestly don't remember which one of us finally landed on that one, but we went through title after title with the publisher and finally thought, here's a good one that captures what we're trying to answer in the book.
Well, it is a catchy title. So what's the goal behind it? I mean, it says something about the new atheism, of course, there in the subtitle, but what kind of angle are you guys bringing to this?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the ways we've thought about the book is there has been other responses, and people are talking about the new atheism out there and the challenges they're bringing. But oftentimes, it ends up being very narrow response to like a particular issue about the Bible or science or philosophy, whereas we really wanted to kind of really take their best shot head on all the questions, all the issues, but put it in one place. But we also wanted to do that with kind of an engaging tone, but really taking their issues seriously. So, for example, you'll see at the header of each chapter, we put one of their quotes that we're responding to. So we really try to let them speak for themselves, and then we try to take that on. And so, that was one of the goals in the book. I don't know, Sean, if you have anything to add to that.
As you know, Brian, the new atheists have just wreaked havoc on this generation. I mean, I talk to so many young people whose faith has been rattled and been upset, whether it's an article they read or a book. And I just really got tired of hearing some of the same questions over and over again from people, even though they'd been answered by Christians in the past, kind of put together in one place with a common voice that Jonathan and I really share with the same education, about the same age and the same passion, written in an understandable and engaging way for this generation. So we really wrote it. Jonathan's a pastor. I'm a high school teacher. Just out of the stories we kept hearing from young people and just out of a passion to engage young people with the challenges of the new atheist, but sophisticated, engaging, and really interesting responses was what we were aiming to do.
Well, I think you do really capture that, and you answer a lot of these just common objections. So give our listeners an idea of what some of these chapters deal with. List some of these objections.
One of the interesting things about the new atheists is in reading their works and listening to them debate on YouTube and different places, and they're all over, you know, social media and other places, is they really tend to throw everything and the kitchen sink at people and really hope that something sticks. And so what we wanted to do with this response, like Sean was saying, is really have it broad enough to encompass both scientific and philosophical ideas on the one hand, but also the moral and the biblical challenges they raise too. And so some of the things that we try to address, we talk about faith, you know, is it really irrational like the new atheists think it is? Is it the process of non-thinking, as Dawkins has said? You know, are miracles even possible? You know, we talk about the origin of the universe, the design, the fine-tuning of life. Is the soul, do we even need a soul anymore? We take that one on. Is religion dangerous in and of itself? Or what about the Old Testament, the God of the Old Testament? So we talk about the claims of genocide and slavery and, you know, the moral argument for God's existence. And do we need the God to ground morality, you know, problem of evil? You know, the did Jesus even exist? You know, Richard Dawkins isn't even convinced that Jesus even existed. So that's just a flavor of some of the kind of things and more that we kind of address in the book.
Now, some readers might look at the table of contents and get the idea that the book is only defensive apologetics, answering objections. But I think you really seem to turn that around into a positive apologetic as well. So can you talk a little bit about how you do that?
Yeah, going back to the time of Jesus and even the Apostle Paul in the early church, apologetics always involved defending whether it's the scriptures, the character of God, the person of Jesus Christ, but putting forward positive arguments, the resurrection, miracles, etc. So we thought it wasn't enough to just say, hey, here's holes in some of the arguments the new atheists are making, but here's some of the positive arguments as well. And we really start off in the first chapter about faith being irrational that Jonathan was referring to. We talk about how there's just been this absolute revolution in philosophy over the past four decades. And going back to that Time cover article, I think about 1966, that said, God is dead, or 1967, maybe it was. There's this idea in academia that God doesn't exist, we can't know he exists, theology is a thing of the past. Well, the very next year, Alvin Plantinga comes out with his book, God and Other Minds, and slowly led to this revolution in philosophy and in Christian thought. So now, and we even quoted at the beginning of the book, you know, some atheists basically saying, not really the new atheists, they won't admit this, but some other maybe more philosophically sound atheists, I guess I would say, we'll say, you know, some of the best philosophy today is actually being done by theists. So we want people in the pews, lay level, to be aware of the powerful arguments for the soul, for the origin, for the existence of God, for the origin of life, the moral argument, and really try to put the new atheists back on the defense. So partly what we're doing is they can raise the problem of, you know, why is God a genocidal bully in the Old Testament? But we're demanding, wait a minute, you've got to give a justification for objective morality before you can even raise that issue or that objection. And objective morality makes the best sense if God exists. So like you said, there's a defensive effort, but we're trying to put them back on their heels as well.
And, you know, this is, I mean, and it's an opportunity, too. You kind of look at this as a challenge and an opportunity, because within the church, sometimes there's some confusion about what it means to have faith and to walk by faith and to love God. By walking faith and things like that. And so what a great opportunity to take this ready-made challenge as these new atheists are really, you know, crashing on the scene in many ways. And there's bus campaigns. There's, I mean, I just read about a recent billboard campaign in Oklahoma about atheism, and they're really raising the issue. And so what a great opportunity to equip the next generation to think through what they believe, why they believe it, and why it matters. And so really see this as an opportunity to really, really take their best shot, as it were, but then also say, well, that's, here's what we say about this, but have we considered this, and really build a case for Christianity and the case for Jesus Christ.
There's an element that I hadn't mentioned yet, and that's the fact that you bring together a really impressive group of scholars to supplement the already meaty material you're both bringing to each of these 18 chapters. So you have Greg Kokel, John Warwick Montgomery, Gary Habermas, William Dembski, Dove Guyvett, Paul Copan, Frank Turek, Daryl Bach, Doug Grutice. You have a whole group more as well. So tell our listeners what sort of content that these scholars add to the book.
The reason we asked these scholars to contribute is we wanted this book to have a unique angle to speak in particular to this generation. And I think one of the best ways to do apologetics with this generation is just somebody sharing their experience and somebody sharing their story. Of course, with the objective truth that goes along with it, we need both of those. So we thought, man, maybe we could get these guys, leading scholars, to just write like 500 words, like a page, 1 to 2 page, either insights they have about these particular issues or just their personal story of how these truths were meaningful to their life. So at the end of some of the chapters, for example, the one on about the origin of life, Fazel Rana, who's an expert, PhD in chemistry, just talked about how his journey to become a scientist, his journey of being motivated by some of the evidence within the natural world to believe in God and how it affects his devotional life and his belief in God today. People like John Ward Montgomery, when we talk about science and Christianity being at odds, he brings some insights and just says, hey, you know, what's objectively true has to have subjective meaning in our life as well. So it's really kind of a neat angle. We hadn't seen this done in a book before where Jonathan and I write each of the chapters, and at the end there's just kind of a short contribution by a scholar who shares their insights but also just kind of shares their heart and what it means to them personally in their life.
Well, another thing I noticed was how you supplement each chapter not only with these scholarly contributions, but you put in suggestions for additional resources. So just looking at this book, it seems to me that the Christian can get this book, get acquainted with, you know, the most common challenges against Christianity we're finding in culture today, and they're not only getting solid answers from you, both as the authors, and on top of that, they're getting introduced to these leading Christian apologists and their work. So I say this is a great contemporary apologetics resource. And speaking to Jonathan here, it reminds me of what you did with your book, Welcome to College, and that is bringing together a ton of resources all under one cover, and you're both bringing this readability element to the book as well. So now that being said, talk about how you both bring in your own stories to the book.
Yeah, that was one of the elements, too, because we kind of start off in the introduction talking about A Tale of Two Oxford Atheists, and we kind of let that unfold and let the reader kind of get into that. But we use that as a story to kind of introduce this whole question of God and how it's up for debate and people have been asking questions about God as long as there have been people. And so what a fascinating story, and so because everyone has a story. And so at the end, we thought, hey, well, why don't we share our own stories a little bit about how God has impacted our own life. And so I was able to kind of share. I came to Christ later in life and investigated these questions and found them really satisfying later on in life. I was 17. I was a junior in high school. And so I share a little bit about that in the book. And so just kind of how God has impacted me and how my investigation and my time in college, which really was a time which I had a lot of professors challenging me on what I believed, why I believed it, and I wasn't ready in college. And so I was scrambling a little bit to try to find some answers, and so I talk a little bit about that as well.
You know, Brian, the first time I ever spoke to a youth group years ago, my dad said, son, I've got three words of advice for you. Stories, stories, stories. And I remember that. And I started thinking about, well, how did Jesus communicate? He told stories. Even Paul, when he reasoned, it was often within a larger story that he was telling. So we wanted to do apologetics in this book, couch it with stories of some of the other great apologists that we mentioned, Gary Habermas, et cetera, but also kind of incorporate our own stories as well. Now, for me at the end, I don't want to over-dramatize it. I grew up in a Christian home. I don't even remember when I became a Christian. My parents tell me I was 4 or 5 years old. I never really remember not believing. I kind of thought if somebody wasn't a Christian, they just hadn't read Evidence that Demands a Verdict or something. How hard can it be? And then I got to college and just started getting confronted with objections I hadn't heard and with more sophisticated challenges to faith. And it was just unsettling to me. And it was the first time I remember reading the Psalms differently when David would cry out, God, where are you? I remember reading that going, God, boy, are you really honestly there? Because I'm not feeling it, so to speak. I actually sat down with my dad, and I told him this. I said, Dad, you know, I don't know if I really believe this. I'm not sure if I think it's true. I want to know the truth, but I've got to discover some things for myself. And my dad's response took me by surprise. He just said, son, I think that's great. And I remember thinking, okay, Dad, are you even hearing what I'm saying? Are you writing the talk in your head or something like that? And he goes, no. He goes, I think you want to know the truth. He goes, seek after truth, and if you really do with an open heart, I'm convinced you'll be led back to Jesus. Well, it's not like I left for 3 years and just traveled around the world and did this. I just started reading, started asking questions, giving myself freedom to doubt. And really, as I looked into it, people, especially like William Lane Craig and J.P. Moreland and philosophers like that and Gary Habermas, who we cite and refer to in the book, were really meaningful to me and helped me realize that, boy, this Christianity makes sense. It's believable. There's reason to believe Jesus is actually God and created the world, and I'm willing to commit my life to this. So I just kind of tell my story at the end to give people encouragement and see how these truths have practically affected me in the way I live.
Well, I think your book has great value. You're bringing a lot of these scholars together to contribute, as I said. You're compiling the best answers to these common contemporary challenges, pointing people to new resources, and you're adding your personal narrative. So it's a great, rich book. Can you tell our listeners about the website for the book? Go ahead and point them to your own websites and how they can get a hold of this book.
Yeah, sure. Our website for the book is DidHumansInventGod.com. So DidHumansInventGod.com, and you'll just find a little overview of the book, find a video that kind of introduces the themes of the book, the challenges of the new atheists, and things like that. There's also periodically, every couple of weeks, every month, there's a different chapter excerpt that you can download. There's information about both of us on there and our own ministries and websites. You can find out more about my ministry at thinkchristianly.org and find out about what I'm up to there and speaking. You can invite us both to speak or whatever through our own websites there. And so you can find out more about the book and as well as kind of how you can order it and everything as well on DidHumansInventGod.com.
Along with a specific website for the book, Jonathan mentioned the DidHumansInventGod.com. My website is just SeanMcDowell.org. Got some articles there. I'm in the process of putting some videos up there with some curriculum that will actually be free. My debate's up there. I have a blog, so lots of free stuff. Other resources up there if people are interested. But if people want to find out more about kind of what I'm up to, SeanMcDowell.org. Of course, Twitter, Facebook, the other ways you can. In this world, there's lots of ways to connect with people. So.
Well, thank you both for being with me, both again. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you all the best with your book.
Hey, thanks, Brian. We appreciate what you do and the opportunity to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a wonderful resource, so thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Sean McDowell and Jonathan Morrow about their new book, Is God Just a Human Invention? And links to the book, as well as their book's website and Sean and Jonathan's ministry pages, can be found at today's blog post at Apologetics 315. This is Brian Auten of Apologetics 315, and thanks for listening.